Welcome to Dialogue. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. The killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery last year prompted a shift in opinions about institutional racism, relationships among people, police and governments, and reckoning with past and present. Today on Dialogue, we're asking what has changed in Knoxville and what more needs to be done in the near future. Joining me today are three people involved in the concrete effort to make those changes in Knoxville. Dr. Nkeshi El-Amin is a lecturer in the University of Tennessee's Sociology Department. Her focus is study of race, place, and black communities, particularly those in Appalachia. She's also the founder of The Bottom, a space that will serve multiple purposes for creators and the community, and is a co-host of the podcast Black in Appalachia. Dr. El-Amin, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you for having me.
Tanika Harper is a co-founder of The Women, a group dedicated to helping find money for Black-owned businesses for expansion or Black entrepreneurs seeking to start their own businesses. She's also the founder and CEO of the Shora Foundation, a program that provides a safe place for young people in underserved areas. Tanika, welcome.
Thank you.
And Dr. Charles Lomax Jr. heads up the Department of Community Empowerment for the City of Knoxville. In that role, he helps oversee the Office of Neighborhood Empowerment, the Police Advisory and Review Committee, the Title VI Diversity and Inclusion Office, and the Empower Knox Initiative. Additionally, his department works with community organizations to see how the city can participate in or aid racial equity efforts. Dr. Lomax, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much for having me. Glad to be here.
We want to hear from all of you as well. If you have questions for our panel, submit them now on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/WUOTFM. Or find our tweet on our Twitter account. That's at WUOTFM. And just submit as a reply. And we'll get to as many questions as we can today. I want to begin, guests today, with sort of setting the stage for this, because we in the press often describe this as a conversation about racial justice, about racial equity. And I wanted to explore today more where the conversation ends, but the action begins, actually taking this to fruition, to actual concrete results. And that's what all three of you are working on in and around Knoxville. So I wanted to begin first with a look at why you feel like this conversation really accelerated in 2020, moving beyond the conversation and asking for more concrete action. And Dr. El-Amin, maybe opening that up to you first. Why do you think 2020 was such a fulcrum point for taking this conversation in a different direction?
Yeah, I think that there are a number of things that were happening in 2020. I think first, the pandemic, it's probably played a major role in what we saw happening as far as people taking to action. People were home, people were had a lot of time on their hands, people were watching the news and watching social media. People were also, especially in the Black community, people were seeing firsthand in large numbers in a very in-your-face way what systematic racism looks like when this pandemic was killing so many Black people, right? And we could see it. I had a lot of my students email me saying like, hey, now I see what you're talking about when we talked about this thing or that thing, right? So people were really forced to confront that systematic racism, and they had the time to kind of to sit at home and see it and think about it and deal with it. But I also think that this started, you know, since the 2016 election of Donald Trump and the decline of our nation, right, from a political perspective, as well as many other, the decline of the nation on different levels. So I think, you know, one, people were, Donald Trump was pulling out a lot of the safety nets and securities that people had known to be America. And Black folks were faced with, again, the sort of confrontation of in-your-face racism. And I think it really pushed people that, hey, either we are going to have to stand up or things are going to get a lot worse.
I wanted to ask, too, that as news cycles change, as we all know, you may hear about something in kind of intense rotation for a while, and then the story changes and people's attention spans go elsewhere. So I wanted to ask if, for instance, you, Dr. Lomax, working as you do with different organizations around town and with your role in the city, do you feel like the passion for that substantive change, particularly on racial issues, is as strong now as it was over the spring and summer?
Absolutely. I think that we're seeing across our country people coming together in uprising of like-mindedness, where we have eyes that are open. And, you know, going back to what Dr. El Amin, you know, made mention of, we've been hearing names for years. This is not anything that's new to the Black community. And I mean, part of the newness is it's being documented on film and video now, but this has been happening, and Black people have been saying this for years, that, you know, we are facing, you know, systematic discrimination, systematic oppression. We are facing all of these things, and it wasn't really heard. And so at the point that people are filming, and we do have video of it, everybody's able to see it in real time. And so I think that, you know, that's one of the things that we've witnessed. But even if you just look at what took place just yesterday in Georgia with the election, you know, I think that in and of itself speaks to some of what we've witnessed and has taken place, not just last year, but in years past. This is something that has been building and has been gaining momentum. And so we're just kind of seeing the culmination of that right now.
And Tanika Harper, I want to turn to you because you are involved in different groups or on the ground level as well in Knoxville. If that's your perception as well, that the passion for concrete change in these areas is as strong today as it was, say, 6 months ago or 8 months ago.
Right now, yes, I do think so. I agree with Charles and what he said. I think right now as a nation, nationally, we do see an uprising, not only within the Black community, but through, you know, allies. And that allyship is very important for where we are trying to get to. But, you know, I would not be honest if I didn't say that I do wonder sometimes, is it a trend? So we're not a full year in from the George Floyd incident or any of the major incidents that happened in 2020. I mean, for us in the United States, the pandemic really didn't get serious until like March or April, right? And so it's like coming up on that year, going into 2021, will it be a trend? Will there still be this time next year the type of support that not only we need but deserve in our community? So I think the jury is still out on that. I'm very hopeful and optimistic because it looks promising, but, you know, if I'm speaking honestly from the Black community, we have kind of seen these quick turns to us, support, and then, like you said, it just kind of phases out. People's attention goes somewhere else. So yet to be seen, but I'm very happy with where it is at the moment.
Dr. El Amin, I want to turn back to you for a moment. As a sociologist, and you study this is your field, when we talk about racial equity, what is it that we mean in terms of concrete actions? How do we get there? And one definition that I saw as I was doing some research for this program is racial equity isn't just a goal, it's also the processes. It's also how you get to the goal. Would you tell us a little bit more about that as it's manifesting in Knoxville?
When I think about racial equity in Knoxville, I mean, I'm going to try to be like Tanika and have an optimistic look because, you know, I, in my time of doing research here in Knoxville, you know, and I listen to some of the stories, I'm just, you know, oftentimes I feel hopeless when I hear the generations, the cycles, you know, the continued struggle that it has been. I mean, of course, it's not just Knoxville, but sometimes it's hard for me to have hope. And I think about, you know, when I think about what Black people want, you know, it's nothing different than what people want in general, right? Like we want, you know, we want to have good schools for our kids to go to, right? We want to have the same kind of opportunities, economic opportunities, political opportunities. We don't want tokenism, right? When I think about racial equity, I think about these things, right? I think about the young folks that feel like they have to leave Knoxville to have a chance at a decent life. You know, those are the things that, so for me, racial equity is really equal opportunity to citizenship in America, equal opportunity to all of the rights and the things that we deserve, the things that we've participated in building in this country that we don't benefit from, right? And it is a process. It's you know, like I said, it's sometimes I feel hopeless because we've been fighting the same struggles for generations, right? When people in their 70s were, you know, in the streets about the things that we are in the streets about today, you know, it's hard to feel excited about the process, right? There's still hope, obviously, but I don't know. I struggle with this, right? Because I'm in my 30s and I'm like, I'm tired, man. How are y'all doing this for 60 years? You know, I'll pause here.
Yeah. Well, I saw both Charles and Tanika were nodding along. Charles, maybe we could toss this to you for some additional perspective on that that same question.
Well, I would chime in along with my fellow panelists and say that hope is something that, you know, definitely try to hold on to, especially in my other profession as a pastor. You know, this is something that to my congregation and to others that I often try to share and to proclaim and preach. And that's something that we hold on to. And, you know, in case she is absolutely right that, you know, we have individuals that are in this city, and I'm a Knoxville native born and raised, that have fought for years for equality and to be able to drink from the same fountain or sit at a counter to have lunch. And we've come a long way because I wish somebody would try to tell me, you know, not to drink from a certain fountain or sit at a counter now. And so progress, yes, but struggle still persists. And so there are other areas where Black people are continually trying to gain access to, be it certain positions or be it capital or whatever the case. And that's something that isn't unique to Knoxville, but it is here as well. And so that's something that, you know, we have to strive and fight for on a daily basis. And even going back to what Tanika said, you know, that is not, or at least should not, just be our struggle. That should be something that is encompassing of our allies and everyone else who desires to see equal representation, you know, across the board, not just under the law or anything like that, but across the board. That's something that we should strive for. And so I remain hopeful. I have to remain hopeful. For the sake of my own sanity, that, you know, this is a change that we can bring about.
And Tanika, to get your thoughts on this as well.
Absolutely. You know, without hope, we have nothing. And so sometimes, you know, that's why I definitely try to remain hopeful, but you can't forget the past. And so I definitely agree with Ankeshi and just speaking about, like, we are still fighting for some of the same things that our elders have been fighting for, right? And when we talk about racial equity, it's not just money, which money is needed. And like, that's probably first and foremost one of the things and how people can move to action. But we can't have this conversation about racial equity without talking about the systemic injustices in our criminal justice system, in our educational system, in our health system. Like, we have to have these hard conversations and how history of the inequities have brought us to where we are. And so when we talk about racial equity, we have to talk about the whole thing. And so I think that, like, the time is now. We have a lot of grassroots Black-led organizations in Knoxville who are really charging these efforts and leading these causes. We have quite a bit of white allyship. And so I think that the momentum is there, and we're definitely making moves in the right direction. And so I'm just hopeful that we can continue to make gains and, you know, not I guess for lack of better terms, not be put aside or shut up by the larger majority as we have saw it happen in the past.
That's the voice of Tanika Harper. We're also speaking today with Charles Lomax and Nkeshi Alamine on Dialogue. We will continue with our conversation about racial equity in Knoxville after a brief break. This is Dialogue from WUOT News. Dialogue now continues. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Our conversation today, racial equity in the community in 2021. I'm joined by three panelists today. Dr. Charles Lomax, Jr. He's head of the Knoxville Department of Community Empowerment. That's a city department. Tanika Harper, co-founder of The Women, a group that's dedicated to helping find money for Black-owned businesses for expansion or for Black entrepreneurs looking to launch a business. And Dr. Nkeshi Alamine, a lecturer at the University of Tennessee's Sociology Department, with a focus on the study of race, place, and Black communities. We want to hear from you as well. Submit a question on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WUOTFM, or go to our Twitter feed at WUOTFM and reply to a comment that we set up there on the Twitter feed soliciting questions. I want to continue in this second part of our discussion by actually talking about some of the concrete efforts that are now underway, and all three of you are involved with these concrete efforts. And Tanika, I'd like to begin with you if I could. Tell us a little bit about The Women, how it came together, what its goals are, and how it works.
Absolutely. The Women kind of started with a group of women from the community, a group of Black women who really were just frustrated at the way things were going in our community and the way we were seeing it. And we started meeting in November of 2019. And just out of initially just a safe place for us to come together, to be mad, to be upset, to express anger and frustration about the plight of Black people in our community. And from there, we started talking about, okay, guys, so, well, it's one thing for us to come together and really like complain about it, but it's another thing if we can really think about putting forth some action. And so we really just kind of had a brain dump and started thinking about, what do people need? Like, if we could only do one thing, what would that one thing be that people need immediately? And at the end of the day, when we look at our wealth gap in our city, we know that that's access to capital. Really with our small business community, our nonprofit community, they're just not getting the same access as our white counterparts. And so The Women, we decided that one of the things that we would focus on, that one thing that we could do immediately, was put money in the hands of Black businesses who may not be able to go into a lending institution and get the $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 that they need to grow, expand, or start their business. And so after about meeting and really making sure we rolled this out right, we met for 7 to 8 months, just really trying to lay the groundwork and the foundation. And we are happy to say that this past December, we have put put some capital in the hands of 3 Black businesses in our community. So we actually launched publicly in June of 2020, and through help of our community, and that's all of the community, all of Knoxville. We have over 600 people pouring into this community fund where we pour it back into the community and to our businesses. So we are really thankful for everybody who has supported the mission and the vision. But that is who The Women is. And of course, we have some other goals and things that we want to get to. But right now, we are thankful that we are able to provide access to capital to people in marginalized communities.
I'm going to come back around to you a little bit later on to talk about your work with the Shora Foundation, but first I want to talk to Dr. Alamine a little bit. You have involvement in different areas at the University of Tennessee, the podcast Black in Appalachia, as well as The Bottom. We could begin by talking about The Bottom. This is a recently established kind of a makerspace, a creative space in the community. Would you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So we're actually, this month, we're celebrating our first year anniversary. So it's really exciting that we were able to survive this pandemic. when things started out at The Bottom last January, we had a lot of hopes, and then the pandemic happened and kind of we had a lull in activities for a while, but the bottom is really, when I think about the bottom, I think about Black space. It's an extension and an expansion of my research. I study race and place and Black people's relationship to place, and very, you know, some of the things that I was grappling with in my work was loss of place, feelings of being out of place, cycles of displacement and dispossession of place amongst Black folks and within Black communities. And so the bottom is a way to really confront that history, that violent history, but also to claim and affirm that Black people belong here and belong in space in Knoxville. And so we definitely want to highlight Black creatives because I think that Black creatives play an important role in any movement that we have, but also really just Black folks in general, cultural space, community building space, event space, whatever we need space for, that is what the bottom is here to provide. And so, we've got a number of permanent projects. We have a number of projects that are going to be unleashed within the next few years. This year, I'm really excited about a partnership with the University of Tennessee, where we'll be doing a faculty fellowship. We'll be starting an ambassador program this year. So a lot of great things planned. For people who are interested, please check us out at thebottomknox.com.
And Dr. Lomax, turn the question now to you as well, because you are involved with many community organizations in your role with the city. What is it that, I don't want to say what is it that you do, because you do so much, but what are some specific avenues where we're seeing some of this concrete action taking place? We're seeing some momentum on helping address racial issues in Knoxville.
Absolutely. So part of my role as serving as the Director of Community Empowerment is overseeing four different offices within the city of Knoxville. And so we have the Office of Neighborhood Empowerment. We have the Police Advisory and Review Committee. We have a new piece, which is called the Empower Knox Initiative, which isn't necessarily new, but it's kind of a reframing of what was Save Our Sons. And then we also have our Title VI office, Diversity and Inclusion. And so within the work that we do within all of those, we're reaching out to all areas of the city, making sure that we are addressing specific needs that are there. And so within that work, we are seeking to represent voices that traditionally haven't been heard. We're trying to make sure that those that have needs that need to be addressed are doing just that. And so with and through the work of PARC, you know, we are hearing the concerns of those that have encounters with law enforcement and feel that in some form or fashion, their rights were infringed upon or violated. With our work through our Office of Neighborhoods, we're on the ground within specific communities and neighborhoods, listening to the concerns that they have and trying to address that. With our Empower Knox initiative, we're really excited about this because we are focusing on our young people, beginning at middle school and working all the way up through age of 24. And we're trying to empower them to make sure that they are benefiting in areas of workforce development and mental health and trauma education. And so we're really focused on that. We're getting ready to initiate and launch a youth council where we're going to be able to really hear from the young people themselves as far as what their concerns are, what their needs are, and to even help to try and shape and form policy through the city that will help to benefit them. And so within all the work that we're doing, we are working in conjunction with other community agencies, really doing what we can to help build capacity with them. We have been able to give out, I believe, somewhere near $70,000 worth of grants through community empowerment this past year to help build capacity within some of the organizations. And as we go forward, we're looking to work hand in hand with those in the community through partnerships that we have with other organizations, which I can say more on a little later.
Well, this is an important point because, and I think this is something all three of you may agree with, that the goal of racial equity or improving conditions in predominantly Black neighborhoods is bigger than a single department or nonprofit person or group, that this really is a multi-tiered, multi-layered thing that involves government, education, businesses, individuals, a little bit of everybody. This is a pretty big goal. Is that right, Dr. Lomax?
Absolutely. Equity is a goal for all of us, and it's not just something that the city can do alone. We have to work in collaboration and in partnership with others, be they companies, organizations, grassroots, activists. Like it literally takes all of us to progress and to move forward. And so that's something that, you know, we're desiring to do. We're having conversations with those on the ground, dealing with a number of different topics as it relates to policing, as it relates to justice, as it relates to entrepreneurship and being able to, you know, like Tanika said, you know, start a business and what that looks like. And so we're really interested in listening and in having those conversations so that we can together move forward.
One thing that's, I guess, expected because of your role in government, government moves at a different pace than a lot of people probably would prefer. It is something where progress may be measured in terms of months or years instead of instantaneously. Do you find sometimes that the people that you work with are frustrated by what in government is considered, well, that's just the pace of business, that's just how we do things because everything has to be done in this kind of bureaucratic style that maybe people are not used to or satisfied with or think that things could be moving faster?
Well, the fact of the matter is I'm fairly new to government myself, and so that's something that I'm experiencing as well. And sometimes it can be a little frustrating because when you see a need or you have an issue, you want that need or that issue addressed immediately. You want it addressed now. And sometimes the wheels of government do move a little slowly. And, you know, that's something that I have to remind myself of is that even within this space and within this office, there's only so much that, you know, my department can do. And there are other times that I have to look out to say, you know what, that's not even my responsibility. This goes over here in this department or this falls under this office. And so I am still in the process of learning quite a bit myself. But one of the things that I do believe is that we are being, you know, in my department, we're to the best of our ability being responsive to those needs that are there. It's part of what we do and think about on a daily basis. And when Mayor Concannon came in as mayor, that was a pledge that she made. And that's something that we're trying to follow up on to make sure that every citizen has a voice, that we're being responsive, and that the needs are being met.
Tanika Harper, I want to turn back to you a moment because when we last heard from you, you were talking about the women. I wonder if you would tell us a bit about the Shora Foundation, of which you are the founder and CEO, how it originated, and what it's doing.
Absolutely. So Shora Foundation, Shora means a safe place in the Nigerian language. It was founded in 2008, primarily serving youth and young adults in East Knoxville. Since 2008, I myself have been a part of and am still a part of many different entrepreneurial, startups, journeys, whatever you want to call that. But because of that, I have learned a lot in the entrepreneurial area, and have since with Shora Foundation, we have kind of started a program that will help build and develop small businesses in Black Knoxville. And so providing access to educational opportunities, access to capital, and that being social capital and financial capital. One of our goals right now is raising $1.5 million so we can have a brick and mortar space that will house a co-working space for entrepreneurs that will help lessen the burden of overhead costs. And in this space, we will also have accelerated business classes that will primarily target the needs of the entrepreneurs in our community. And so through partnerships with Shora Foundation, we are really looking to, economically develop small businesses in our community to start chipping away at the wealth gap that is ever so large in our area. And we do know that this is not an overnight success, right? This is like a 5-year, a 10-year plan, but we have to start somewhere. And although, you know, this is a marathon and not a sprint, if we know that going in, then we set these long-term goals and put strategies in place to meet them. The thing is, you know, we want to be intentional about who we serve, be it our youth community, are a business community and not just throwing a couple of dollars at something and walking away, because we know it's more than that. And so, and that's what Shore Foundation wants to do to our, primarily targeting our Black entrepreneurs, startups within 1 to 5 years in our community, to develop them, to get them to the revenue, that $100,000 revenue, to get them to the point where they can hire an employee at a living wage. And so that's our goal there.
All right. Dr. El Amin, to turn back to you for a moment, one of the other projects you're involved in is a podcast called Black in Appalachia, which is an interesting, I think, from my interpretation, it shows that underserved areas aren't just geographic, they're also in terms of knowledge about the stories we tell and the histories that we record, and Black in Appalachia is working to sort of fill in a lot of those gaps. Would you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, so you're definitely on point with that. Black in Appalachia is a part, the podcast is a part of a larger initiative with East Tennessee PBS to pretty much highlight the stories of Black people in and through Appalachia. And this initiative has been going on for about 8 years now. The podcast is most recent. We just launched this August 8th, and we tell historical stories, contemporary stories, stories that help people to understand what Appalachia is for Black people, to highlight Black places in the region, Black untold stories in the region. It's been a really fun project. You know, we've gotten to talk to a lot of influential people in our region, like Nikki Giovanni. We're working on an episode right now that will release this Saturday. We did an interview with Deisha Filia, who is a writer out of Pittsburgh. It's just been a great journey and an exciting project. We've gotten a lot, we've been received very well from the community within and with and outside of the region.
Okay, and I should point out too, by the way, two other local connections. Your co-host is Angela Dennis, who is a reporter with the Knoxville News Sentinel, and the project is being shepherded in part by Will Isom over at East Tennessee PBS, who's a friend of the station and I know is very passionate about this as well. So some great yes. local connections there, talking again about a grassroots, a locally directed effort, which is really cool. We're going to pause one more time for a station break. We're going to continue our conversation about racial equity and concrete actions in Knoxville in 2021. After this, you're listening to Dialogue from WUOT News. You're listening to Dialogue. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Our topic, if you're just joining us, racial equity in the community in Knoxville. Our guests today are Dr. Nkeshi El Amin, a lecturer in the University of Tennessee's Sociology Department, Tanika Harper, a co-founder of The Women, as well as founder of the Shora Foundation, and Dr. Charles Lomax, Jr., head of the Department of Community Empowerment for the city of Knoxville. We had a question come in on Facebook that I'd like to share with you. The listener would like to, the panelist to comment on the new pilot project involving the Knoxville Police Department that pairs up social workers with officers to respond to some nonviolent calls that may involve a mental health or other kind of societal aspect. And she was wondering a little bit about the effectiveness of that program and if there might be more effective ways to continue to kind of work on this community liaison model. And Dr. Lomax, since you're over the PARC, P-A-R-C, the Police Advisory Review Committee, if you could maybe weigh in on that change, which is relatively recent.
Absolutely, it is relatively recent and so recent that we don't have a lot of data thus far to go along with it. But the initial reviews are that it's going extremely well. We've seen that models like this have been extremely successful in other locations and places. And so we have no doubt that we'll be able to see similar results here. And we, you know, definitely think that it's important to have that component present on certain calls. And I really think that, you know, going forward, this is a model that will be able to be successful. And, you know, we're hopeful that we can make sure that needs are being addressed without always having to respond with law enforcement showing up, you know, with pistols drawn, which hasn't been the case here, perhaps, as we've seen in other places, but it's been going extremely well so far. And so it's showing early success, and that's something that we want to hold on to.
And I want to build on that because this summer did produce some pledges for change from Mayor Kincannon's office, as well as you released a statement back in June that said that the Department of Community Empowerment was committed to ensuring all Knoxvillians are treated in an equitable and just manner, and that the department would push for policy changes that would help us achieve liberty and justice for all. I know it's been only a few months, but what kind of changes can you report on those fronts?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, we want to make sure that we are being deliberate and having tangible results. And so we have seen body cams, which are now coming in to play with our police department. That's something that they have in their cars and traditionally have had in cars. We now have them on the bodies also. And then we also have the pledge of the eight can't wait. We had a number of those that were already being enacted by KPD. But we did go ahead and sign on to that and adopted that, which deals with use of force in certain instances, firing from moving cars, restricting chokeholds and so forth. And so that's something that our police force has adopted and embraced also. And so we continue to press forward in that to make sure that we again are seeing those tangible results. And long-term, you know, issues take some time to see the results that we want to see. But again, thus far, those are things that showing early success as well.
I wanted to talk back to Dr. El Amin for just a moment here, because again, we got about 15 minutes left in the show. And I knew this would happen. There's a lot more to talk about than there are minutes in the hour to cover. So I wanted to get to a couple of other points. When we talk about some of the efforts we mentioned earlier, from government to Black in Appalachia to the women, what are some of the other efforts going on in town that you're aware of that you want to make sure get mentioned, where, again, people are going beyond conversation and into the realm of action?
Yeah, I always want to uplift the work. Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay. I always want to uplift the work of the city council movement, because I think that we have seen a shift in local politics because of the work of CCM. And so all of those folks that are involved in CCM, 100%, always want to support them and that work. I used to be a part of CCM, and even pulling back a little bit more before that, before CCM was Rescue and Restoration, and Rescue and Restoration is still around today. I'm still organizing with that group of folks. And this is a group that started, I want to say 2014 or 15, and have been working tirelessly. And before Rescue and Restoration, they have been organizing in different capacities, but Rescue and Restoration has been working tirelessly, meeting every month for the past, 4 or 5 years, working on issues from politics to health inequalities, to educational inequalities, to economic inequalities. And so I always want to uplift their work. There are folks like the Black Mamas Bailout Action that are doing really important work on the ground here in Knoxville. There's so many others that we can name, but those are three that I want to highlight today. And I'll pause there.
And Tanika, I want to pose the same question to you, individuals or groups that are doing this work in the community that you'd like to mention?
Absolutely. So we have the Knoxville Black Chamber that is kicking off here very soon. We have Black Coffee Justice. We have Sleeves for Needs in our community who is doing the work. And Keshi mentioned a lot of them that are out here, you know, really, really working hard towards the mark, towards the goal. We got Unique Academy, Seed, who are all doing some great things in terms of health in our community. We have the Alliance House, who is focusing on some Black health initiatives. And so we have a lot of people in our community really, really like taking the torch. And one thing I want to say about it is, we're not doing it in our own silos, right? So a lot of this work is being done together, which is very, very important. So like, although I'm a part of the Women and Shora Foundation, I'm also going to the Rescue and Restoration meetings, right? I'm also trying to see how I can support, you know, Black Coffee Justice and Unique Academy. So I think that is important for us, and that it be known that although all of these organizations kind of have a focus in their own initiatives, we really are, more than not working together. And that's what I love about this movement.
And I just want to add to that, Tanika, I think that's a great point. And I think another thing about that point is that this is intergenerational work, working together, right? So Black folks across different generations are working together and are, you know, presenting a united front. And that excites me a lot as well.
I want to mention a specific proposal. This is one that was made late last month by Vice Mayor Gwen McKenzie that would have the city apologize for urban renewal efforts that took place in the mid-20th century, as well as form an African-American equity restoration task force that would identify up to $100 million in funding over a seven-year period to help help support efforts in the Black community that we're talking about. Dr. Lomax, could you give us kind of an overview of that proposal and where it stands right now?
Well, as far as the overview, you pretty much detailed it specifically in your introduction of it. And at this point, conversations are still being had among city council, as well as the administration and city council to see how the rollout of that is gonna take place. It did pass unanimously in last month's meeting, and it had a conversation that went along with it, and you know, council members were able to share their thoughts with that. And going forward, we're going to, you know, carry out and enforce ultimately what city council comes up with as far as the restoration task force and everything that comes along with that. We're definitely within my department excited about the opportunity of progressing that and leading that effort. And we look forward to working with community members and those who will be on the restoration task force, whatever that ultimately looks like, to ensure that, you know, over the next 7 years, we're able to, through grants and other dollars that come in, be they private or public, really make the impact that is there through urban renewal and kind of the hole that left within the Black community. Businesses closed, churches had to relocate, some closed, homes, you know, in the process were destroyed and people were moved, and that ultimately did have an impact. And so this is an opportunity for us to go back and look at that and address that and make sure that we are helping to assist just with that work of equity.
We had another question submitted on Facebook, this one I believe for Dr. El Amin, referring to the bottom. Will the community space be free for people to use, and are there plans to give small businesses an opportunity to have equity ownership in the building?
So I don't own the building. We don't own the building. The bottom doesn't own the building. We are renting the space. There are definitely opportunities for people to use the space, you know, for different purposes. People can reach out and we can talk about that. We do also do space rentals for folks who are looking to rent the space, but the you know, one of our goals is for space to not be an obstacle to whatever people are working on. And so if folks are interested in a project or can't afford the rental fees, which are quite affordable, then they should definitely reach out to us and we'll work it out.
I wanted to ask all three of you, and we'll go in kind of a rotation on this question before we parted ways. We've talked a little bit about action that is currently taking place and some that may be taking place in the near future. Where do each of you want to see more action take place? Where are the areas you feel like this really needs attention? It needs to be worked on. And Tanika, we can begin with you on that, because we talked about kind of a little bit about what's going on. Where would you like to see more action in the future?
Well, although I know that we've kind of talked about some things that are happening and that are going on, I kind of want to say just more attention to really pouring in to our Black communities through economic development. And that could be through youth opportunities with our training and trades programs that we are seeing being taken out of our schools. So sort of like these vocational programs, right? For our kids and our community. So definitely like youth opportunities, because if we build up our youth and they can graduate and have good paying jobs, right? Living wage jobs when they graduate from high school and have a vocation to go into, that definitely helps with with the wealth gap and with poverty that we're seeing in our communities. So I definitely think more attention really needs to be put towards like youth programming and youth opportunities, really trying to see how we can develop our businesses in Black communities, because the truth of the matter is there's money and resources being poured into organizations in our community. So like the Knoxville Entrepreneur Center, the Chamber, and don't get me wrong, SCORE, those organizations are doing great things, right? So hear me when I say, because I have taken advantage of those programs, but those are in affluent communities, mostly serving affluent white businesses. And so we kind of need those same resources being poured into Black communities and Black businesses at the same rate. And so again, because it's not an overnight fix, although we are seeing some headway in, and actually we're not seeing it yet. So let's be clear, we're not seeing it yet. People are talking about the need to do it. So nothing is really being done by way of local government or, you know, organizations yet, but the talk is there, right? People are on board. So actually wanting to see the fruit, and in particularly in those two areas, in our youth programming and education, and into our business community.
And Dr. El-Amin, same question to you. What are areas that you think need greater attention and action?
Yeah, I think that we need to see more from our local governments, right? I think that our city government, our county government needs to do a lot more. I hear Charles, and I know that these processes can be long or seem long, but honestly, I feel like the community is tired of hearing the same things. We're tired of seeing this snail pace movement. Usually when actions happen against us, they happen quickly. And when actions are happening for other communities, they happen quickly. When it comes to Black folks, actions for Black folks, it's usually the snail pace, it's molasses, you know? So I think we need to see more from our local governments. I think we need to see more investment in Black neighborhoods, and not just infrastructural things like, as Tanika said at a previous meeting, streetlights and sidewalks, but we need to see real investment in our community. We need our Title VI office to be a legit office on its own, not falling under something else, reporting directly to the mayor, part of the organizational structure of the city, right? Those are things that we've been asking for a long time that we are not seeing any movement on. And so I think the city government, the county government, there's so much that's lacking. And they know, we are constantly talking to them. We're constantly presenting proposals. We're constantly at city council meetings. And so it's not a case that we don't know. We know, we just don't see action, you know? And we don't have the time to get into all of the details, but like I said, the city knows, the county knows.
And Dr. Lomax wondered if you might have a comment on that or thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that as far as what I want to see or the needs that are there, I think that recognizing the need and the involvement of people who have historically been left out of the conversation and the process, I think ultimately representation matters. Representation matters on boards and different agencies that we have within the city as well as without. And it matters who sitting at the table as far as being elected. And so I think that one of the things that I would like to see, and one of the things that we have been working on, is really trying to help organizations with board development, helping individuals get on boards that are in and around the city that the mayor has appointment to. And we've really been trying to make sure that, you know, we're addressing that need and that we're diversifying there as well, because again, representation matters. I would like for us as a city to be able to practice what we preach. And that's something that we've started to do. We are in partnership with an organization called GARE, the Government Alliance of Race and Equity. And we just took 50 of our employees through a training that, a 6-hour training that deals with what it is to understand poverty and race and equity and a number of other things that we traditionally just don't focus on. And so we're trying to get to that point where internally we're working in tandem, and that's something that we're looking to push outwardly as well.
Dr. Charles Lomax, head of the Department of Community Empowerment for the City of Knoxville, thank you for your time today. Thank you to Tanika Harper, co-founder of The Women and the founder and CEO of the Shora Foundation. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
And Dr. Nkeshi Alamine, a lecturer at the University of Tennessee's Sociology Department, co-host of the podcast Black in Appalachia and the founder of the makerspace The Bottom. Dr. Alamine, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Brandon. I appreciate it.
Thank you all for listening so much. Greg Hill is our producer. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. You've been listening to Dialogue from WUOT News.